A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Python 3.14.6 dropped June 10th with 179 bug fixes. Daniel saw that and sent us a question that I think a lot of people have in the back of their heads. He writes Python constantly now, mostly through AI tools. And every time a new release lands, his brain goes, I should check what changed, followed immediately by, and I should definitely not use it for anything. The bleeding edge in Python, like bleeding edge Linux distros, feels like something you let marinate, but he's never actually looked at the changelog to see what's being tinkered with between these incremental releases. So, two questions. What's actually new in 3.14? And how do you stay on top of Python's evolution without getting caught off guard by deprecations or breaking everything with dependency conflicts?
The gap between I should check the changelog and I actually know what changed is where most working Python developers live. And it's not laziness. The release cadence is genuinely hard to keep up with. During the bug fix phase, Python ships roughly every 2 months. 3.14 alone has had 6 maintenance releases since October 2025. 3.14.1 and 3.14.2 landed 3 days apart in December.
That's not a release cycle. That's a panic.
It was unusual, but it happened. And it's exactly the kind of thing that makes people go, I'll wait. The real question Daniel's asking isn't what's in 3.14.6, it's what actually changes between point releases and how do I stay informed without fighting dependency hell. So let's trace it properly. The major features that landed in 3.14.0 in October 2025, then what gets tinkered with in maintenance releases like 3.14.6, then the deprecation arc, then a practical strategy.
And the deprecation arc is where the real foresight lives. Python's deprecation index right now shows removals scheduled all the way through 3.19. That's half a decade of planning, if you're paying attention.
Most people aren't. So let's start with what actually landed in 3.14.0, the features that make this release worth paying attention to, even if you're not planning to upgrade today. The sleeper hit is deferred evaluation of annotations, PEP 649 and 749.
Explain what deferred means here, because I think most people's mental model of annotations is the thing after the colon that my IDE uses.
Right. In every Python version before 3.14, when you wrote a function with type annotations, those annotations were evaluated immediately at definition time. The interpreter would run the annotation expressions as code, right then and there. So if you had a forward reference, a class that hasn't been defined yet, you had to wrap it in quotes as a string, DD4 x colon int arrow star dart. The quotes told Python, don't evaluate this yet.
Which always felt like a hack. You're writing valid Python inside string literals and hoping nobody notices.
In 3.14, annotations are no longer evaluated eagerly. They're stored in special annotate functions and evaluated only when something actually asks for them. So, def fox colon ints arrow strix just works, even if chinti or strix isn't defined yet at parse time. Forward references without string quoting.
That's cleaner. What breaks?
Anything that relied on eager evaluation. Pydantic, Fast API, any runtime type checker that was reaching into Haitian's annotations and expecting fully evaluated objects. They now get deferred annotation objects instead. There's a new module called AnnotationLib that gives you three formats for reading annotations. VALU, which evaluates them to runtime values, ForwardRef, which replaces undefined names with special markers, and String, which returns them as strings. Powerful, but it's a new surface area for confusion.
three formats. So library authors now have to pick which one they want, and if they pick wrong, things silently break.
Or loudly break. And the migration path isn't obvious for every use case. But the language level benefit is real. No more string quoting forward references, and the runtime cost of defining annotations drops significantly. It's one of those changes where the user-facing win is small, but the implementation complexity is enormous. Larry Hastings and Jel Zijlstra did the heavy lifting on this one.
What else landed?
Template string literals, PEP 750. This is a new TT prefix, PTTT, that creates a template object instead of a string.
How is that different from an F string?
An F string interpolates immediately and gives you a plain string. The values are baked in at creation time. A T string keeps the static text and the interpolated values separate. So it selects star from users. Where id equals, open brace, user id, close brace produces a template object where the SQL structure and the user supplied value are distinct. You can sanitize user id before it ever touches the query string.
That's the safe SQL use case. What else?
HTML sanitization, shell command construction, custom domain, specific languages. Anywhere you need to distinguish between this part is code I wrote and this part is user input. Jim Baker, Guido Van Rossum, Paul Everett, big name contributors. It's a new primitive, not just syntactic sugar.
And it doesn't break existing F strings. It's additive.
Completely additive. You opt in by using the DTTT prefix. Then there's PEP734, multiple interpreters in the standard library, the tconcurrent.interpreters E module. Subinterpreters have existed in the C API for over 20 years, but this is the first time Python code can create and manage them directly.
What's a subinterpreter for someone who's never touched the C API?
Think of it as a completely separate Python interpreter running inside the same process. It has its own global state, its own imported modules, its own everything. Since Python 3.12, each subinterpreter gets its own GIL. That was PEP 684. So now you can have true multi-core parallelism. The docs describe it as having the isolation of processes with the efficiency of threads.
That's a good line. Is it actually that clean?
There's overhead to sharing data between interpreters. You're not sharing memory directly. You're passing messages through queues. It maps naturally to the actor model or communicating sequential processes. There's also a concurrent.futures interpreter pool executor that gives you a familiar interface. The real win is for CPU-bound workloads that need parallelism without the memory overhead of multiprocessing.
And then there's the no-GIL mode.
Free-threaded mode, officially supported now under PEP 779. It was experimental in 3.13. In 3.14, it's production-ready. But, and this is the part that gets skipped in the headlines, there's a 5-10% single-threaded performance penalty. The specializing adaptive interpreter from PEP 659 is now enabled in free-threaded mode to close the gap, but it doesn't eliminate it.
So it's not a free lunch. You're trading single-threaded speed for true parallelism.
And whether that trade makes sense depends entirely on your workload. If you're IO-bound, async is still better. If you're CPU-bound with heavy computation that parallelizes well, free-threaded mode might win. But you have to benchmark your specific case. Anyone who tells you, just turn off the GIL, as blanket advice is wrong.
5-10% across an entire code base is real money.
It is. And it's why the free-threaded builds are separate downloads. You opt in deliberately. There's also a new tail call interpreter, which is a C-level implementation detail, not something Python programmers interact with. Opt-in works only with Clang 19 Plus on x86-64 and ARCH64, 3-5% geometric mean improvement on the PyPerformance suite. The docs specifically say this isn't tail call optimization of Python functions that's not implemented. This is about how the C code that runs the interpreter dispatches bytecode instructions.
So, a compiler trick that gives you a few percent for free if you're on the right architecture.
Right. Incremental garbage collection is another under-the-hood change. No more stop, the world pauses. The GC now does its work in small increments rather than halting everything. PEP 768 adds ss.remoteexec for debuggers to attach to running processes without stopping them. Controlled by an environment variable, zero overhead when not in use. PEP784 brings Z-standard compression into the standard library, compression.esstd, no more third-party dependency. Bracketless except from PEP758 means you can write except value error, comma, type errors without parentheses. Syntax highlighting in the REPL. PGP signatures discontinued in favor of SigStore. Android binary releases.
That's a lot of ground. The deferred annotations and T-strings feel like the ones that'll actually change how people write Python day to day.
Agreed. Sub-interpreters are huge for a specific audience, people doing parallel computation who've been fighting the GIL for years. But deferred annotations affect every code base with type hints, and T-strings are a new primitive that'll show up in every web framework and database library eventually.
Those are the headline features. But the question that brought us here was about the incremental releases. What changes between 3.14.5 and 3.14.6, and how do you keep up without breaking everything?
The answer is less exciting than most people expect, which is itself useful to know. Maintenance releases are almost entirely bug fixes, security patches, and build improvements. No new features. The 3.14.6 release page says it plainly, roughly 179 bug fixes, build improvements, and documentation changes since 3.14.5. The notable changes in 3.14.5. Section in the docs mentions changes to the GGC module. That's the scale of what gets tinkered with.
So when Daniel sees Python 3.14.6 released and thinks I should check what's updated, the honest answer is, nothing you notice unless you hit one of those specific bugs.
And the bugs being fixed are edge cases by definition, crashes in unusual circumstances, regressions from earlier fixes, platform-specific build issues. The release cadence during bug fix phase is roughly every 2 months. 3.14.0 in October 2025, 3.14.1 on December 2nd, 3.14.2 on December 5th. 3 days later, which isn't normal and probably involved the regression they wanted to fix immediately. Then 3.14.3 in February 2026, 3.14.4 in April, 3.14.5 in May, 3.14.6 in June.
The 3 day gap between 0.1 and 0.2 is telling. Even the Python core team ships something and immediately goes, wait, hold on.
Which is exactly why the wait a beat before adopting a new minor version instinct is correct, but not for the reason most people think. The interpreter itself is stable at 3.14.0. The release candidate phase catches the crash bugs. The risk in adopting early is dependency compatibility, not interpreter stability. If you're using libraries that haven't tested against 3.14 yet, you're the one discovering their breakage.
That's the bleeding-edge Linux distro feeling Daniel described. It's not that the kernel is unstable, it's that the package repos haven't caught up.
And Python's release cycle is designed around this. Each version gets 5 years of support total, about 2 years of bug fix releases, then 3 years of security-only patches, then end of life. As of right now, July 2026, 3.14 is in its bug fix phase. 3.13 is also still in bug fix phase. It'll get maintenance releases until October 2029. 3.12 and 3.11 are in security-only mode. 3.10 is still active. 3.9 hit end of life on October 31st, 2025.
7 active versions. That's a lot of Pythons.
And the one version back, heuristic, is the practical response. For production systems today, 3.13 is the conservative choice. It's had over a year of maintenance releases, the ecosystem has largely caught up, and it's supported for another 3-plus years. 3.14 is stable and has the new features, but if you're not ready to be an early adopter, 3.13 is perfectly fine.
The deprecation arc is where this gets interesting. You said Python is planning half a decade ahead.
The deprecation index on docs.python.org shows pending removals organized by target version. CGI HTTP request handler is gone in 3.15. The docs literally say anything is better than CGI. The entire AsyncCO policy system, ziget event loop policy, ziget event loop policy, all of it, gone in 3.16. Collections, ABC, byte string gone in 3.17. The non-standard decimal format specifier, capital N, gone in 3.18. Implicit MSVC struct layout switching in C types gone in 3.19.
And then there's the stuff with no date yet. dtime.utcnoosnow, the old threading method names like aseta and isdaemon, tcodex.x.open, tcodex, open, tcodex.
Those are in the pending removal in future versions. Bucket. No specific version assigned, but they're deprecated now. The deprecation period is typically 2 to 4 versions. If you're using Tysentio.getEventLoop policy today, you have roughly 2 years to migrate, but only if you know about it.
That's the catch. Only if you know about it. Most people don't read the deprecation index.
And Python doesn't shove it in your face. Deprecation warnings are silent by default. You have to opt in to seeing them with the T-WD flag or by configuring the warnings module, which is the first practical thing anyone should do. Run your test suite with Python -WDD at least once per release cycle. It'll surface every deprecated API you're touching.
How often is once per release cycle in practice?
During bug fix phase, about every 2 months, so roughly 6 times a year. 10 minutes per run, maybe an hour total per year to stay fully informed. That's the entire time investment.
An hour a year to not be surprised by deprecations. That's a good trade.
It's absurdly good, and it pairs with the second habit, read the porting to Python XY section of each What's New document. It's a specific section, usually near the bottom, that tells you exactly what will break when you upgrade. Not the full changelog, just the breaking changes. The Python docs team writes it specifically for people doing exactly what Daniel's describing.
So the practical strategy, start to finish. Someone's sitting at their desk right now, they've got projects in production, they want to stay current without getting burned. What do they do this week?
Step 1. Install multiple Python versions side by side. On macOS or Linux, PyEnv handles this cleanly. On Windows, the Python Install Manager from the Windows Store does the same thing. You don't replace your system Python, you add versions alongside it. Step 2, pick a baseline. For new projects starting today, 3.14 is a reasonable choice. It's stable, in bug fix phase, and has deferred annotations and T-strings available. For existing production systems, stay on 3.13 until 3.14.3 or 3.14.4 has baked, then plan the upgrade.
3.14.4, shipped in April. So we're already past that threshold.
We are. 3.14.6 is the 6th maintenance release. The early adopter risk window is closed, but you still want to test before migrating production. Run your test suite against 3.14 with 9-WDTA and see what lights up.
Step 3.
Bookmark the deprecations index and the What's New page for the version you're targeting. Check them once per release cycle. The PEP index at peps.python.org is the canonical source for planned changes. The release schedule, PEPs, PEP745 for 3.14 and PEP790 for 3.15, give you the full timeline. And understand the 5 phases, feature, pre-release, bug fix, security, end of life. Knowing that 3.14 is in bug fix phase tells you it's safe. Knowing that 3.12 is in security, only mode tells you it's time to plan a migration.
The 5 phases are worth naming explicitly. Feature phase is where new things land. Pre-release is beta. Only bug fixes after that point. Bug fix is roughly 2 years of maintenance releases every couple months. Security is roughly 3 years of patches only. Then, end of life, no more changes.
And the total is 5 years from initial release. 3.14.0 was October 7th, 2025, so 3.14 goes end of life in October 2030. 3.13 goes to October 2029. You can plan upgrades years in advance.
The free-threaded mode complicates this, though. If someone's considering turning off the GIL, they're making a performance trade-off, not just a stability decision.
Right. 5-10% single-threaded penalty. The specializing adaptive interpreter being enabled in free-threaded mode in 3.14 helps, but it doesn't close the gap entirely. If your workload is I/O-bound, async or threading with the GIL is still the right call. If it's CPU-bound and parallelizable, image processing, numerical computation, that kind of thing, free-threaded mode with sub-interpreters or threads might win. But you have to benchmark. There's no universal answer.
Benchmark your specific case is the least satisfying advice, and also the only correct advice.
I know, but it's true, and the tools are there. One concurrent, interpreters for sub-interpreter. For sub-interpreter-based parallelism, free-threaded builds for GIL free-threading, and the existing multiprocessing and async CO modules for the traditional approaches. Python 3.14 gives you more options, not a single new default.
What about the PGP signatures being discontinued? That feels like it matters for people in secure environments.
PEP761. Python no longer provides PGP signatures for release artifacts. Sigstore is the replacement. Short-lib certificates tied to OIDC identities instead of the Web of Trust model. If you have CICD pipelines that verify Python downloads cryptographically, you need to switch your verification from PGP to Sigstore. This isn't just a Python decision, it's an industry trend. The Web of Trust model has been crumbling for years.
So if someone's in a regulated environment where they have to verify the provenance of their Python interpreter, they need to update their verification pipeline.
Yes, and the Python release page documents the Sigstore verification process. It's not complicated, but it's different. And if you don't know about it, your verification will just silently fail when you try to verify a 3.14 download with PGP.
The deferred annotations change feels like the one that's going to cause the most subtle breakage, not crashes. Just behavior that's slightly wrong in ways that are hard to debug.
The 3-format denotation libbed API is the part that worries me. Value, forwarder f, string. If a library author picks the wrong format for their use case, or if two libraries in the same project expect different formats, you get confusion that's hard to trace. Pydantic and FastAPI have already been working on compatibility. They were involved in the PEP discussions, but smaller libraries may not have caught up.
And the migration path for code that was doing runtime inspection of TI annotation directly.
Use denotation lib, dit de annotations, with the format you need. If you were relying on eager evaluation to catch name errors early, that's gone. The error now surfaces when you first access the annotation, not when the function is defined. For most users, that's fine. For tooling authors, it's a new thing to handle.
The T-string thing is more immediately useful, but also more opt-in. Nobody's existing code breaks because T-strings exist.
Right. You adopt T-strings when you want safer string interpolation. The use cases are compelling. SQL, HTML, shell commands, any DSL where injection attacks are a concern, but nothing forces you to switch. It's a new tool, not a new requirement.
We've covered the features, the maintenance cycle, and the deprecation timeline. Let's turn this into something concrete.
Three things you can do this week. 1. Install Python 3.14 alongside your current version using PyNV or the Windows Install Manager. Don't migrate production, just run your test suite against it with -wdtia and see what deprecation warnings you get. Those warnings are Python telling you exactly what's coming.
2. Bookmark the deprecations index at docs.python.org/3.14/deprecations and the Porting to Python 3.14 section of the What's New doc. Check them once per release cycle. 6 times a year, 10 minutes each. 1 hour total to stay fully informed.
3. For new projects starting today, consider 3.14 as the baseline. It's stable, it's in bug fix phase, and has deferred annotations, T-strings, and sub-interpreters available. For existing production systems, 3.13 is still the conservative choice. But start planning the upgrade with a deprecation warning audit now, so you're not scrambling when 3.13 approaches end of life in 2029.
The meta lesson is that Python's release cycle is designed to be predictable. The fear of the bleeding edge is mostly about dependency conflicts, not language instability. If you manage your Python versions with PyEnv and test with -wda, you can ride the leading edge safely.
The gap between I should check the changelog and I actually know what changed is exactly one episode wide. Close it.
The steelman against all of this, most working developers don't need any of these features. Deferred annotations are a nice to have. T-strings are for framework authors. Sub-interpreters are for a niche audience. And free-threaded mode costs performance. The sensible thing is to ignore Python releases entirely until your Linux distribution or cloud provider forces an upgrade. Chasing releases is a hobby, not a professional necessity.
That's fair for a lot of people. If you're writing scripts and simple web apps, the feature set of Python 3.10 is perfectly adequate. But the deprecation arc doesn't care whether you need the new features, todaytime.udsinoa, whether you're paying attention or not. The hour-a-year investment isn't about chasing shiny things. It's about not being surprised when your code stops working on a future Python version you're forced to adopt.
The forced adoption always comes at the worst possible time. That's the real argument for staying current. You get to choose when you deal with it.
The deprecation index now extends to 3.19. Python is planning half a decade ahead. We can too, if we pay attention. 3.15's first release candidate is planned for October 1st, 2026. That's 2 months from now. The next feature set is already in development.
Thanks to Hilbert Flemingtoft for producing. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you want to send us a question like Daniel did, email the show at myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The hosts dig in, the hosts dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.